Keeping it real, really, really real, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that sleeps late every morning. Getting his kicks on Route 66, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, baby. Does that sound like the Big Bopper to you? I'm trying to do my best Big Bopper impression.
It sounded good. I liked it.
And that's with no practice at all.
Yeah. Can you do Wolfman Jack?
No, I can't do him. Oh. I don't smoke anymore. Yeah, I used to be able to smoke, but
yeah,
that's gone.
You gotta have that sound in your voice to do Wolfman.
Hey, like
you
just got babies.
Yeah, you just got done sucking the end of a bus exhaust pipe.
Yeah, it's like talking and clearing your throat at the same time. Anyway, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, the only Medicare podcast you need to listen to today. And we are so happy to have you. You're hearing the voice of Randy Carson, and I am Doug Jones. As Drew McMillan, our announcer, just said, I am your Medicare expert for today. And Randy has certified me thus, and that makes it legal for me to be talking to you on this microphone today. We are here to help people who want to make the transition from normal life to Medicare life as easy, painless, and confident and fearless as possible. It doesn't have to be a frightening experience. It can often be a beneficial experience because people going on to Medicare often find that their medical coverage is better quality and less expensive than the Obamacare coverage they've had up until that point. Not everybody finds that, but most people do. And so we're here to reassure you that transition to Medicare can be fun. Randy and I are only here because sometimes we have fun. That's what we look out for every day. Would you say that's accurate, Randy, or not?
That is accurate. I'm sorry.
It took him a couple of beats.
I'm a little late coming into the conversation because I just got off the phone. Someone called into the Medicare for the Lazy Man offices, and they cannot wait for us to pick up on one of our conversations from an earlier podcast about Chisholm Bob.
Oh, yes. I forgot about Chisholm Bob. Tell us all about it.
Well, we were talking about abacus, you know, using an abacus, and many, many times it's faster if you're good at it than a calculator. Well, back in the early 70s, there was a fellow, I don't know where he was from, but it was in the States, invented a type of mathematical computing that you use only your hands. The positions of your fingers, you know, whether they're bent, whether they're not bent, or whatever the case may be, whether they're folded under. And it essentially is using your hands as an abacus. And it's called Chisholm Bob. And as long as your totals don't add, I think you can go from 1 to 100 representing this way.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't go over 100 in your totals or anything else, you can use your hands, and it's faster than an abacus. So for those of you at the grocery store that are trying to keep track of your grocery bill going through the store, it might be an option, but you better be careful because people are not going to go away happily if they think you're throwing gang signs at them.
All right. Well, I'm going to give you my theory, my observation. Never heard the name Chisholm Bob, except it kind of did seem to be dredged up from a memory. But my daughter was born at the end of 1972. And when she was in grade school, some proponent of that type of calculation taught the whole class how to count with their fingers. And I swear to God, I think it held her back. I think her math skills were retarded. And I can use that word, ladies and gentlemen, because her math skills were not as advanced as they might have been had she not had to rely on the finger counting that Randy described to us. So the theory might have been, you know, interesting, but I'm not sure it was ever evaluated for effectiveness before it was put into some of the schools. And frankly, I don't think I know my daughter doesn't do it anymore, but there were years where when she would do some calculation, you'd see those fingers moving away. And it just, I think it took the place of her memorizing multiplication tables and addition and subtraction and division and all that stuff. So I don't think she was as good at math as she could have been without having used that method.
I do have something to add, though. Basically, it's another detracting factor from Chisholm-Bopp.
Okay.
It never went over very well in the cold climates like Illinois.
Mittens. Your little kids wear mittens.
You got mittens and boots, so you can't do anything. I mean, they're lucky they can count because you got one big-ass mitten, a thumb, another big-ass mitten and a thumb. You got four. And then you got two boots. So you can go to six.
If your family took you to Disney World on vacation, then you can lay out by the pool and calculate physics problems and crap like that all day long, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Calculate trajectories. But if you put those mittens on, you're helpless.
Well, then you go back to the day when they were trying to teach modern math.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I never did quite catch on to what the purpose of modern math was, because my daughter was, learning math about the same, the same time that Chisholm-Bopp she was after that, but ultimately they were teaching the new math, and I never did get the point of new math.
Well, the state of Illinois decided to plunge into that, and they gave us books that were written on typewriters. And they were like paperback books, and then they had brown bindings. They were like three-ring binders they weren't even that good. They had these these metal things, and depending on how thick the book was, you'd stick it through the holes in the book and then bend it over.
Yeah, like
call that stuff.
Like legal folders, attorneys use those.
Exactly. And so we carried those books around from seventh grade up to graduation from high school. Now, I didn't know it as new math. It was called Illinois math because the state of Illinois, hired some mathematician and he put this program together. And so a whole bunch of us in school, it was always the higher echelon students, and I don't know how I qualified to be in that. But when I got to college, I enrolled in calculus as a first semester freshman in college. And I swear to God, I knew every word that teacher was going to say. It was fantastic. So I went from feeling like a barely passing, C- math student to like a genius compared to all the other people in my calculus class. So it was valuable to that extent that I was able to get rid of most of my math requirement in college by virtue of having had the same material earlier than most kids are exposed to it. The downfall for me was that I met... The first day of that math class, that calculus class, I met this girl, and oh boy, that pretty much took care of all my study time. So my interactions with her really put the kibosh on my college career for a few years. But then along came Mrs. Jones, and things picked up again.
Let me think now. So. When you met this first girl, your priorities got shifted quite dramatically.
They did, and I was yanked back to reality on a daily basis because I also pledged a fraternity, and they told me in the fraternity in no uncertain terms that I and my pledge brothers were lower than the lowest whale poop at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. So I went from being lower than whale poop in the Marianas Trench to trying to be, a stud with this hot girl that I had. And life was confusing back then. And then eventually the college said, you've had two good semesters here. Why don't you just go elsewhere? And that led to my 9-year undergrad degree.
Well, I was not a fraternity member, but in the universities that I attended, I knew a lot of them, and I'll never forget this one. I mean, I kid you not, back in Nebraska, as you might imagine, in the middle of January, it's not balmy out.
Okay,
the one of the stunts, I guess, for lack of a better term, or pledge requirements or something, they had to go lit the fraternity house. Yep. The pledges had to go live underneath the front porch for a weekend.
Really? Only for a weekend, huh?
Yeah, it was just a weekend, but you know, it was like 20 below zero. So sure. literally they're dug in there like gophers trying to keep from freezing to death.
Boy, that sounds like a waste of a good pledge class. I mean, I don't know how many of them froze to death, but geez, you could have had them digging ditches or doing something. I will say that because of fires that killed large numbers of people in a single fire, they had a law that if a bunch of people slept in one room, then the room had to be open to the outer air so that smoke inhalation would not kill people if there was a fire. So that room was called a dorm. It was basically a big room with a lot of bunk beds. We had 74 guys in our fraternity house, ATO, I'm going to say, Alpha Tau Omega. And we all slept in a bunk bed in a room with a hardwood floor that was basically not heated, and it had windows open. This was the top floor of a big giant Tudor house, and it had windows on both sides. So when it snowed on people close to the windows. When the wind blew through. And so everybody had an electric blanket, which we called Mother, and then another blanket on top, which makes the electric blanket's heat stay with you. And I don't know how they did it, but they assigned beds, and I was assigned bed number one, which was the upper bunk closest to the door. And I'll tell you something, I'm a sound sleeper. It never bothered me, but I think that's why they didn't give it to other people, because guys are wandering in and out all night long trying to find their beds because there were no lights on at night, you know, so it's dark and they're stubbing their toe and swearing and stuff like that. But the coolest thing to do would be to find two guys that had the same brand of electric blanket that were close to each other and switch their plug. And so you can imagine during the night, one of them is getting a little chillier and he turns the temperature up on his control unit. The other one's getting a little warmer than he wants to be. He wakes up, he turns the temperature down. And pretty soon you got two guys that are completely miserable and neither one can figure out what's going on.
So, that is funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
As Larry the Cable Guy says, that there is funny.
That's funny right there. Well, listen, let's do a little Medicare stuff today and then take off for the weekend because, as I might have said, Drew McMillan, our episode announcer, is coming to visit this weekend. He's not going to be with us long. He's going to blow into St. Charles, Illinois and spend a little time with us, and then he's got a flight to catch back to his homeland in the Dominion of Canada. But it'll be great to see him for a little while and ask him how Mrs. Drew McMillan is. His lovely bride is with child, and so we'll want to know all about that. Do they have names picked out? Do they know what the kid's going to be when he grows up? Any number of things young parents always obsess on when they are having number one come down the pike. So I wanted to do something pretty darn fun. Every once in a while, we get correspondence from a valued listener, and that guy's name is Steve. Steve has spent more time, he's got to be unemployed, because he has spent so much time over the course of the last few months coming up with excellent, excellent questions that we answer during the course of the podcast. I don't know if he's probably a college kid who's using this as research for his thesis, I'm guessing. There's a reason. I mean, nobody is this curious about Medicare. Medicare is not the kind of exciting subject that one spends a lot of time thinking about, but Steve always comes up with interesting questions, and he gives me an opportunity to strut my stuff. So here's Steve's latest question. He said, hi there. Say, he's very conversational. Say, you picked your plan. Oh, I think what he's doing is, let's say that you picked your plan. He also tends to drop a lot of words off. I think he doesn't like to mince words. He's kind of like Barney Fife. I don't chew my cud twice. So he says, say you picked your plan. Plan G, or high deductible plan G, or as Randy and I call it, high value plan G. And he says, how do you pick a company? Does it just come down to price? I know that you said United American Insurance would let you switch to Plan G after 2 years or so, and that would make them unique. Other than that, is it just price? And I have told people in the book, Steve, here I am. I should be reading my answer, but I have told people in the book that price should not be your only determinant, because some companies will do an unscrupulous act with the price. They will have a money-losing, loss leader, low price to lure new customers. And then they will crank that price up faster than medical inflation would dictate in order to retain those people and to get more revenue out of them, make up their loss, and hope that most of them are too lazy to change. So that's why I've always told people, don't just look at price. But I got to tell you, I've been beaten. I've been beaten down by the clientele that I have. All the people that have used me for their agent over the last year or so, when I tell them, okay, well, you know, Humana's cost this, Mutual of Omaha cost this, and United American in Texas with a very stable rate history cost much less than any of those, they say, give me United American. And that is unfailingly why I've seen people go for the lowest price every time. And the reason I'm okay with that is because United American is an honorable company. They do not come in with a loss leader and then lure people in and jack the rates up down the road, hoping that they can bleed people with, and gain additional revenue. So anyway, I said, hi, Steve. I used to encourage people to select the most rock-solid insurance company in order to have the best chance of long-term rate stability. Unfortunately, my altruism fell on deaf ears. Before learning about United American and watching them in action for a while, my standard recommendation was Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. For some reason, their charter is filed with the state in such a way that they never, ever ask any health questions about anything, ever. Plus, people in Illinois just love that company. Once I started showing people the lower monthly rates for high deductible Plan G at United American, the loyalty evaporated. In most states, the generous offer from United American that allows a policyholder to change plans usually results in a much higher rate for the richer plan, like F or G. Now, I should back up, ladies and gentlemen. What we're saying here is United American is the only insurance company I've ever seen that allows you to come in with the high value or the high deductible Plan G. And then if you're of a mind to change, at the two-year mark, they will send you a letter telling you that you have a one-shot opportunity to change to one of their other plans without having to answer any health questions, without having to qualify. And so the good news is there, if you're scared, if you're worried that you made the wrong decision by going with the very inexpensive high deductible plan, you can change at anniversary two, no harm, no foul. The downside to that is the only people who do change are sick people. And the fact that they're sick drives up the rates on the richer plan that they accept, that they want to take. So you can go in at a low high deductible plan rate, but if you later want to switch to the regular Plan G, you're likely to pay a rate that's higher than the average market price. I just want to say that. Now in Illinois, I would move somebody who had a change of heart like that to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, because there is no medical questionnaire to fill out. But if they had to stay with United American, they're probably going to pay a surcharge. They're going to pay more for that richer plan than other companies might charge. So I said to Steve, my wife and I purchased high deductible Plan F when each of us turned 65. And we have never given any thought to switching to a more expensive plan, although we could do that at any time. At the onset of Medicare, each of us saved $110 per month in lower premium. If something bad happened unexpectedly, our risk is still very limited. $160 a month for Plan F minus $50 a month for high deductible Plan F is a certain amount of savings. That's $160 per month of savings. Times 12, that's $1,320 saved for each of us each year. The maximum out-of-pocket limit with high deductible Plan F this year is $2,340. If you subtract the money that I saved this year alone, the amount at risk is only a little over $1,000. If you had few or no medical expenses in the past 2 years, you are $300 to the good. The savings is actually greater than your maximum risk would be. So I also go on to say to Steve, there are four states in New England and some other states with weird laws that allow some flexibility. For clients in the rest of the states, I warn them to choose carefully so that they don't develop regrets later on. However, as much as people profess to love a certain company, they will generally opt for the lowest cost plan almost every time. And unless they have zero savings or are very frightened of some risk, the high deductible plans are very reasonable. I hope that answers your questions. Listen for this discussion in an upcoming podcast episode. That's my answer to Steve, who I always enjoy hearing from. And I don't know what our time, I feel like I've been talking for hours, Randy. Have we, you know, is anybody still listening?
We are coming in for a landing. You may not have heard the announcement.
Well,
the purser.
I didn't hear it.
The purser made the announcement.
I didn't even see the purser's lips moving. So that's.
I didn't realize the purser was the one that did that, but the purser is the one on the aircraft that makes all the announcements.
Well, you didn't watch enough Love Boat, did you? You should know what the functions of all of the officers on board are.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, it seems that some of the officers' functions are only to chase girls. That's, you know, oh, look at the new meat. You know, look at these passengers. The doctor, for instance, he didn't really do any doctoring that I could ever tell.
No, he didn't. So. He didn't. The only one I remember off the Love Boat was Julie McCoy.
Oh, what was her function? Was she the social director?
She was the entertainment director, the social director or something.
Did she walk around with a clipboard all the time?
I didn't notice the clipboard.
Okay, but. I think they put a clipboard in somebody's hands and they had her walking around going, okay, it's volleyball coming up and then shuffleboard.
Oh, my. Yeah, that would be the worst. I've been on a number of cruises. We love cruising because we love going around and drinking beer on the middle of the ocean and being fed and not having to, carry our luggage around.
What's not to love about that?
No, really, but I kid you not, if you were the cruise director in terms of the entertainment cruise director, is the world's worst job on the whole cruise ship because they never get a chance to rest.
Well, no, but they get paid. Now, I don't know if they get paid a lot. I have heard that stand-up comedians do very well on cruises because they don't work them that much because they don't want the passengers, to get tired of them. So they'll work one, a couple of shifts, maybe Sunday night and Tuesday night, and then they're off the rest of the time in a cabin, a stateroom somewhere.
And I've also been on some of the bigger cruise ships. I mean, they're like floating cities, but I like the smaller ones myself. But anyway, we've been on some of the large behemoth ships, like it's a floating country coming by. And they actually fly the comedians in, like on a helicopter for their gig, like on Sunday night, and then they leave until Tuesday night, and they're off. Uh-huh. They fly them out of there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess there are worse ways to earn a living.
There is,
and you only have to be that funny because your audience is kind of captive. It's not like they can, throw vegetables at you. Where are they going to get the vegetables to throw?
Well, plus it's free. I mean. How can you, it's not like you paid to get in the show. You paid in there with 14,000 other people trying to get a stool up in front, just like everybody else.
It's the comedic equivalent of a Medicare Advantage plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Randy was drinking coffee instead of snickering at my stupid joke. Well, so.
That is a great metaphor. A Medicare Advantage plan is like the comedian show on a cruise ship. Yeah, get there early, you pay nothing, and you might get a drink afterward.
But at least you might get a chuckle, too, and that's always nice to have.
You might get a chuckle. Not a lot, but you might get a chuckle.
We should tell the people where to go and what to buy. don't you think?
Yes, you need to go to Amazon.com as quickly as your little mouse will travel, have mouse will travel, and get yourself a small supply or maybe a medium-sized supply of Doug's book, MedicareForTheLazyMan.com. Be sure you've got some wrapping paper this time of the year and some ribbon, because you're going to need it. All the grandkids, all the nieces and nephews are going to need a copy of this someday, and I would suggest packaging one up, wrapping it with a nice bow, and putting it in their sock. And they'll appreciate that, won't they, Doug?
Kids of all ages love the book. So I think it's partly just because they love tearing wrapping paper to shreds. But who knows? Who knows what motivates a kid? Anyway, so you can come to our magnificent website if you'd like to read about Medicare, or if you'd like to get a quote, if you'd like to have me consider helping you buy your Medicare supplement plan, go to the map of the United States, click on your state, fill out the questionnaire, shoot it in. The questionnaire is real short. And you shoot that in and we'll talk. And we'll see what it is you'd like to accomplish, and hopefully we can help you do that. So thank you so much for listening to us today. We'll be back again soon, I hope.
Yes, we will. And I promise you, we will have great information that you've never thought of having.
Like Chisholm Bop?
Chisholm Bop. That's one of those things, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Who would have tuned in today knowing that they were going to learn about Chisholm Bop?
Certainly not me.
So anyway, we'll need to sign off because we are running out of gas. But thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll catch you again next time on Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy from Oklahoma and sole proprietor of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Bye-bye.